He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
It's Katz at Night. John Katzimatidis here with Lydia Serrano. How are you, Lydia?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Did you recover from your vaccine on Friday?
Almost 100%, yes.
We missed you Friday.
Thank you. I got the shot Thursday morning, and then I felt it Friday. Really, I was like, whoa, I felt a little dizzy. But yes, I'm fully vaccinated, so are you.
Well, you're joining me. I have double coupons. You have double coupons.
There you go.
And a guest in our studio today, we have Monica Crowley. How are you, Monica?
John, great to be with you. Lydia, nice to see you too. And it's so good to be back behind the mic at WABC.
That's your old home.
It is for a long time. So it's great to be back.
Tony Carbonetti, ex-chief of staff to the mayor of the city of New York, Rudy Giuliani.
Pleasure to be here, John. Thank you.
How was your trip to the Far East?
Very good. I always enjoy it. I was in the Middle East. I love going.
Middle East.
Yeah. They're now having a little uptick, so I don't know if I can go back right now, but always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. And we have our special guest that we have every Monday. We have Bill O'Reilly. And I understand today is a great day. I think his new book is coming out. Bill, are you there?
I am, John. Killing the Mob.
Tell us about the book. I heard you talk about it to somebody else, one of our mutual friends, and you were terrific.
Well, the mob is a history of how organized crime got so powerful in the United States of America. We saw it Bonnie and Clyde, John Dillinger in the 30s and the Depression years, and that led to the rise of the FBI because they were doing so much damage in the Midwest, robbing so many banks, and the folks loved them because the folks hated the banks and helped them. And then the feds in Washington, FDR, said, we got to get this under control. So they formed the FBI under a young J. Edgar Hoover. And they essentially went out, the FBI did, and assassinated Bonnie and Clyde and John Dillinger and all these. It wasn't come out with your hands up. It was right between the eyes. And then from there, you had Al Capone in Chicago. He's a Brooklyn boy. And then the mob switched over after World War II to the unions and control to this day, much union activity in the United States, including New York. So we give you the whole big crew, and I think anybody reading Killing the Mob is going to stay up all night reading it. It's that kind of a book.
And they wiped out all the bank robbers, I understand.
Yep. Nobody survived, and they were relentless, the new FBI people. The only guy that survived was Alvin Karpis, part of the Mob Barker gang, because J. Edgar Hoover told his men, don't kill him, capture him, and I want to come and put the handcuffs on him to get the picture to put in the paper, because Hoover was getting all kinds of heat. He was just a desk jockey. He wasn't a real law enforcement guy like Elliot Ness. And that happened. And they got Karpis in New Orleans, and Hoover was there, got his picture in the paper as the big crime fighter.
Well, the other tidbit I heard is that the so-called mafia had something on Hoover. And Hoover kept his hands down on the desk for like 15 or 20 years.
That's right. After World War II, the Italian mafia became the most powerful entity in the United States, more powerful than Congress or any corporation. They ran it all. They ran the unions. They ran Hollywood. They ran the rock and roll industry, the restaurant industry, you name it. The mob ran it.
Bill, Tony and Carbonetti here. How are you?
I'm good, Tony.
I actually grew up in East Harlem, Italian Harlem. Fat Tony Salerno ran my neighborhood. So I understand exactly what you're talking about. In the 70s, my neighborhood was the safe neighborhood back then.
Mm-hmm. You bet. And Rao's is there to this day, and no crime will occur within four blocks of Rao's to this day.
That's exactly right.
And and you would never call Fat Tony Fat to his face.
No, you wouldn't. He ran
Tony
a great candy store.
Tony.
It was a great candy store. They'd sit outside and play cards. They'd give out ice cream to the kids. And on your birthday, you could go inside and take a toy. They actually didn't sell anything, but they kept the rest of the neighborhood safe. But no kidding around, though. It was horrific because they took advantage of other Italian Americans. I mean, people like to glorify them, but what they were actually doing was keeping their own people down. And
I want to answer John's question here. J. Edgar Hoover denied any existence of organized crime. And Lucky Luciano, who was the boss until Vito Genovese took over, Lucky Luciano said in his diary that the mob had something on Hoover. Now, I can't verify that. I can only tell you what Luciano said. Now, Hoover was known to be a gambler. He did that. And he was also gay. So I don't say in the book what they had, but certainly J. Edgar Hoover did not allow the FBI to investigate organized crime until Bobby Kennedy became Attorney General of the United States.
Bill, it's Monica. Great to talk to you, and congratulations on the book. Question about Bobby Kennedy and his efforts to target organized crime. Can you just talk about the impact of that, and do you sort of mark Kennedy's efforts as the beginning of the end for the mob? It was a long end, but do you sort of mark that moment in time as the beginning of the end?
Yeah, the mob is still here. But it operates differently today than it did. Bobby Kennedy came in as Attorney General, and he had it out for Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa was mob run, the head of the Teamsters Union. And what this scam was, and to this day, is that the organized criminals can take money from the union pension funds. That money funded Las Vegas, the building of Las Vegas. So Kennedy went after Hoffa very, very visibly, all right, and didn't get him. It wasn't Kennedy who got him. But the feds finally did get Hoffa, and in killing the mob, we have how Hoffa was killed minute by minute. So I don't think that's ever been anywhere.
Wow.
But you'll find out exactly what happened.
So you have to buy the book. It's available on Amazon.
Yeah, you can pre-order it.
Barnes & Noble, and you can pre-order it on your website?
Yeah, on BillO'Reilly.com. The only place that's not selling Killing Mob is Rails. But anyway, Bobby Kennedy, against his brother's will and his father's will, just remember, Sam Giancana, the godfather of Chicago, rigged the election in Illinois in Kennedy's favor. Richard Nixon actually knew
it. What? You're talking about rigging an election?
Yes, and Bill,
you mentioned Richard Nixon. You know who was Richard Nixon's assistant? It was Monica.
Yes, and Bill, President Nixon and I talked about the 1960 election many times.
Well, you'd correct me if I'm wrong, but Nixon knew that he won Illinois.
Yes.
But Giancana fixed it that JFK won the state. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it also went along with voter fraud that they orchestrated, the old man Kennedy orchestrated in West Virginia and with LBJ's help in Texas. So they threw those three states for JFK.
Wow.
And Richard Nixon actually won the 1960
election.
But the
Democrats said there's no such thing as voter fraud.
Voter fraud? They've been
no
perfecting voter fraud for decades.
Breaking news. 60 years later, Nixon won in 1962, right?
That's
1960.
Is that how long it's going to take news. When we find out what really happened in the last election?
Well, it might take another 50 years.
You know, maybe if I live long enough, I might be able to find out. In 1960, Joseph Kennedy did not want Bobby, his son, to investigate the mob, and neither did JFK, the president. But Bobby Kennedy did it anyway. And what that led to was the RICO statutes that Congress passed, where you didn't have to actually commit a crime. You could just talk about a crime. Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And the wiretapping became so sophisticated that changed everything in the upper echelons of organized crime. And now they franchised it out. It's all about narcotics now. And that's thanks to Vito Genovese, the most evil of all the godfathers, Vito Genovese, evil incarnate.
Bill, can you just talk a little bit about pop culture's influence on how we perceive the mob from The Godfather and Goodfellas?
Absolutely. These movies are so powerful and the performers are so charismatic that even though the material is straightforward, people sympathize with them. The best example of this is American Gangster with Denzel Washington, which chronicles a real guy in Harlem who set up the heroin traffic. Now, Ridley Scott, the director of the movie, does put in a lot of the ravages of hard drugs in the film. But Denzel Washington is so charismatic that the viewer actually identifies with him a little bit, when in reality, he's the worst person on earth. Not right. Denzel, but the guy he's playing.
And you know what?
That pop culture influences
yes.
the way we see organized crime, but
yes.
not in Killing the Mob.
And you know what,
not
Bill?
There
was a similar dynamic with The Sopranos, because Tony yeah. Soprano was sort of, you know, yeah. mid-level guy, but the way they wrote the character made him almost sympathetic. He was an anti-hero, and people were shocked to find themselves actually rooting for Tony Soprano.
And that, look, these guys are so good. Marlon Brando, James Caan, Al Pacino, they're so good at what they do that viewers are mesmerized. It's almost, Monica, like watching me on TV.
Yes. Yes.
Not polite. I'm so charismatic.
Lydia is mesmerized for sure.
Right on.
Well, so is Governor Cuomo. Remember, he was talking about how he tries to act like he's a gangster himself, and how he thought, Al Pacino should play
Governor
him
Cuomo
and Robert De Niro?
Governor Cuomo just outdid de Blasio. De Blasio opened up Independence Day July 1st.
Correct.
On Friday.
Yeah.
Governor Cuomo, I think, said today, well, maybe we'll do May 19th.
Right. He's lifting all capacity on May 19th. Ugh,
we have different kinds of gangsters.
Yeah.
The Cuomo family did not like the emphasis on the mafia and Italian gangsters. But here's even a better story. You'll all remember I Love Lucy, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Who was Lucy's husband?
Jesse Arnaz.
Sam Giancana put a contract out on him. Hired an assassin to kill him.
Why?
You want to know why? Because Desi Arnaz produced a program called The Untouchables, which featured the mafia.
Which didn't exist.
Desi Arnaz just avoided death. We have that story in Killing the Mob. He was that close to getting his brains blown out because of The Untouchables.
Wow. That's the ultimate cancel culture.
Cancel culture.
Hello.
Now, the other thing, Bill, I don't know if you go into it in your book. I understand at a certain point that Hoover had his own hit squad of 10 to 15 FBI agents, and that he would do the same thing he did with the bank robbers.
Well, after World War II, and one of the most stunning parts of our research is that the mafia helped George Patton invade Sicily to defeat the Germans. All right. Again, you'll have to read the book, but I didn't know that and I wrote Killing Patton until Killing the Mob. But after World War II, Hoover basically didn't want anything to do with any kind of organized crime stuff at all. Now, he did have a squad in the FBI to take care of things, as he put it. But it wasn't really directed at organized crime. It was other things that he wanted to disappear.
Was it John Kennedy?
No. Now, a lot of people say because the mafia was so furious with Bobby Kennedy that they ordered the hit on John Kennedy. Mm-hmm. But if you read my book, Killing Kennedy, that's not true. And the reason it's not true is that Giancana and Genovese and Marcello in New Orleans and Trafficante in Tampa, they were the big boys. They knew if they assassinated JFK, it was over for them, mm-hmm. that then the federal government would wipe them out in any way like Osama bin Laden, okay? So they didn't do it. What they did do was have Jack Ruby assassinate Lee Harvey Oswald. That was a mob hit because Ruby was dying of cancer, knew it, and the Dons didn't want Oswald to say, I'm a patsy. They made me do it, which is what they feared Oswald was going to do. Mm-hmm. You remember before he was killed, Oswald said to the press, I'm a patsy. Mm-hmm. And they organized crime said he's going to finger us. That's why Jack Ruby assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald.
And the Jack Ruby thing goes on to why Dorothy Kilgallen got killed.
Yeah, Ruby was a low-level mobster, kind of the Tony Soprano of Dallas. And he knew he was dying. And the mob said, you take care of this, we'll take care of your family. And that's what happened.
And take care of his family in Cuba. Well,
yeah, I mean,
there's so many, well, you know.
I can't wait. I want to read it.
Wait, I mean, everybody, our entire audience, we got maybe 250,000 people right now at 5 o'clock. Go out and buy Killing the Mob by Bill O'Reilly. You can get it on.
You can do Amazon. Amazon, you can pre-order it. And you can go to BillO'Reilly.com.
Yeah, but Lydia, the best deal is BillO'Reilly.com because if you buy from us, we'll give you 50% off Killing Crazy Horse. Which is sold almost 600,000 copies.
Well, you can't beat that.
So you get two books and a really good deal.
Fantastic.
Can't beat that. 10th book. Continued success. Just 18 million copies. That's all.
Well, Bill O'Reilly, thank you so much.
After John Katz, we'll have 18,100,000. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill O'Reilly, thank you so much.
And 9 o'clock tonight, we got a real kick butt.
Monday through Friday.
We're aiming for 20 million by Friday.
Monday through Friday, Bill O'Reilly from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock on WABC Radio and transmitting or streaming worldwide, WABCRadio.com.
We'll be right back. We still have Tony Carbonetti in studio as well
and
as
Monica
Crowley.
And Monica is going to tell us her favorite stories, and Tony is going to do the same. And we'll be right back after the break.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
This is WABC. John Katzmatidis here. And we have Lydia Serrani, Monica Crowley, Tony Carbonetti, and we're here to tell you what's going on. I mean, that was real good stories on the Bill O'Reilly. I'm definitely going to read that book.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, we do have some breaking news that we need to tell you.
Breaking news, WABC.
There is the most eligible bachelor in the world right now, Bill Gates. Bill Gates, as well as the most eligible bachelorette, Melinda Gates. They are divorcing, and I see, Monica, you don't have a ring on your finger. So, Bill, and your beautiful woman, Bill Gates, Monica, give her a call here at... No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, no, I've already texted my boyfriend that I fully intend to be the new Mrs. Gates. Bill Gates doesn't know it yet, but I'm going to be his new girlfriend.
And, Tony, what were you
saying? If Melinda calls my house and my wife answers, I'm sure she'll be fine with it. Don't worry about it.
Money can't
you split her in for 10%.
Exactly. I'll cut her in. Don't worry.
Money can't buy happiness, but it makes life much more
tell
pleasant.
Tell that to Al Gore. I mean, the minute he made $500 million
divorce.
On that TV deal, and I was supposed to be an investor in that deal. Divorce.
Hold on. If you think about it, though, Melinda stayed with him a long time. The guy's a college dropout who made something of himself.
27 years they were married. Also, Jeff Bezos, the world's richest man, he surpasses Bill Gates. He's also divorced, has a girlfriend.
Yeah, he has a girlfriend. He's also divorced. She should write a book on how to land a multi-billionaire because it's pretty incredible. She's not even like a spring chicken. She's an older woman, and she doesn't even look
like
it.
Yeah, listen, billionaires are a dime a dozen these days. According to Forbes.
In this room, maybe, but not...
You know,
a billionaire's a dime a dozen?
According to Forbes magazine, there were in the world, there were 2,700 billionaires. But that increased in the last year because I understand Forbes magazine is owned by the Chinese. Monica, do you know much about that?
I don't know specifically about Forbes.
Well, here's what happened. I was number 7-11 in the world, something like that, the year before. All of a sudden, I get the magazine. I'm number 1,100. Guess what happened in between?
The Chinese entered.
There's 400 more Chinese put in between.
Well, you know, there was a story published, I think it was in the New York Post just this week, that Beijing has now surpassed New York City in terms of the number of billionaires, but our billionaires actually have greater net worth than the Chinese billionaires.
Real billionaires?
Yes.
You know, do you believe the Chinese numbers?
No.
That's why they used to call it Chinese money. There's a reason they call it the Chinese money.
Yeah, I don't believe much of what comes out of China.
What I always find fascinating about our list, John, and you're included in that, is the number of self-made U.S. billionaires. This is the place where it can actually happen. People tell me, you know, all over the world, where you're born is where you die.
Nobody's breaking in to go to Beijing.
Yes, the United States is the one place. You work hard. You have a little luck. You see what happens. I mean, look at that list. Most of them are all self-made, working hard, creating something, inventing something, employing a lot of people like you do, John. I mean, this is the place it all happens. And that's why, like you said, everyone's rushing to come here. No one's fighting to get into China.
Yeah. The problem is that the Democrats and the left are working night and day, 24/7, to try to erase this
They're chasing
as a land of opportunity.
Florida.
Yeah. I mean, their goal really is to expand government power and control. It's to achieve and lock in one-party rule like we have now here in New York and like they have in California, and to reshape the relationship between government, the economy, and the individual. So they really want to strip away individual freedom, and they want to really decimate free enterprise, which gave us John Katsimatidis and gave us the land of opportunity.
They want to cancel success.
Yeah, I keep saying you can quantify as people, as billionaires move out of New York City, someone can tell you how much they paid in taxes and try to figure out. But the philanthropy, it's the libraries, the parks, the stadiums, all the other good things that they do. You can't quantify that.
Now, one more thing, Tony. You know, Rudy had a lot of problems last week. The FBI came to his door at 6 o'clock in the morning. And you were his chief of staff. You were his best friend. You protected him forever.
He doesn't need protection. There's no doubt in my mind he did nothing wrong. Absolutely. I mean, I know the man almost my entire life, and the ethics are second to none. There is no
doubt. I agree with you.
When I see these things, it just makes me sad. Because if you asked him to turn those things over, he gladly would do it.
You know, I had arguments a couple times in our lifetime between me and Rudy. And I still admired the man, and I still did the right thing by him, and I think you were there, you understood that.
John, there is no one like him, and the letter of the law to that man is, he's not crossing that line.
Now, Dershowitz was on our show on Sunday, and he may be representing him, but I got a flurry, ready? A flurry of calls. Now they're trying to demonize Alan Dershowitz.
Oh, of course.
I mean, Dershowitz is one of the straightest arrows I know, 50 years at Harvard. Monica, what say you?
And Dershowitz is a classical liberal. I mean, he's not a conservative. He's not a populist. He's a classical liberal. Taught at Harvard for many, many years, including to this very day. Look, they went after him the first time when he stood up to defend President Trump against scurrilous charges and that impeachment. And now he's standing up for his good friend Rudy Giuliani, who, as Tony said, likely did nothing wrong whatsoever. And the FBI is at his door at 6 o'clock in the morning. So Dershowitz is standing up for the Bill of Rights. He's standing up for human rights. He's standing up for civil rights. He's standing up for the Constitution. And the left has already long disavowed him. But now the left really seeks to do the coup de grace in terms of totally canceling him. They tried with the Trump defense.
There is two different kinds of lefts. There's the liberals, like Martin Hasner, who's a good friend of ours, that believes in helping underprivileged and believes in helping people. And then it's the progressives that I call
regressives.
Mm-hmm. And those people just want to cancel our success in our country.
Governor Cuomo today, he was specifically asked about the nursing home scandal, and he made a comment that it was all politically motivated by the Department of Justice. So why can Cuomo say that any investigation into his dealings is politically motivated? But when we say, look what's going on with Rudy Giuliani, how could it not be politically motivated? He was investigating the president's son. He was in Ukraine. Everybody goes, oh, no, 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 no. You know,
exactly. Well, first of all, hypocrisy and double standards run rampant. But the Democrats on the left are masters of projection. So they accuse our side of what they themselves are doing and what they themselves are guilty of. And, you know, it's really unfortunate because Dershowitz, nothing's going to shut up Dershowitz, right? He cannot be silenced, but they're doing everything they can now to cancel him because the first time they tried, they failed.
I was out to dinner with some very, very good friends of mine that we did Bill Clinton together back in the 90s. And they brought up at dinner that Dershowitz is not right.
Wow. And you heard what John Solomon said on the show, that he was told stop investigating Hunter Biden.
On Friday's show, Monica, tell Monica.
John Solomon said, because I specifically asked him, do you think had Giuliani not been investigating Hunter Biden, this would have happened to him? He said, you know what? I don't want to speculate, but I can speak from my own personal experience that I was specifically told by a top Democratic lawmaker who shall remain nameless, told me, lay off on Hunter Biden, otherwise you will get hurt.
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't surprise me at all. It saddens me and outrages me, but it doesn't surprise me. And you know what? This kind of dynamic of the two-tier justice system where the elite ruling class on both sides skates. Meanwhile, the average Joe has got to put up with, you know, the FBI banging down their door at 6 o'clock in the morning. This is what gave rise to Donald Trump, because people were furious that there are two standards.
The FBI has to follow the law and they have to follow the orders. They have to follow the orders of politically appointed people.
But the problem is there is no equal application of the law. Where are they on Hunter Biden? Why aren't they at his door at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Hillary Clinton.
Well, it comes back to a politically appointed head of the Department of Justice that makes decisions on who gets indicted and who doesn't get indicted.
Right, but the FBI should be, the FBI should be sitting above all of that.
To the Department of Justice.
I understand, but they're supposed to be the agency that equally applies the
and
law.
I asked Louis Freeh to come on and talk about it on the show, and he passed.
Very sad.
Tony?
I didn't realize Louis was asked to be on the show.
I'm surprised.
But no, the FBI has to follow. And Rudy said they were very cordial when they came. They presented the papers.
99.9% of the FBI.
But those guys are following orders.
They're following orders.
Are you surprised that he offered Biden's hard drives and they said no thanks?
Yeah, I think that kind of tells you what they're looking for. They want nothing to do with that. You know, and it's
the fact that they took his word is pretty telling as well.
Well, they're not supposed to do that, you would think.
Well, again, where are we as a country if the FBI is so shot through with political corruption that they're applying the law to a certain group of people that believes in populism and Republican politics and conservative ideology, but not those who don't? They're protected?
You
That's
in
outrageous.
Washington, you were in Washington. Joe Biden last week said during one of his speeches, he says, I'll say it the way I say it on the street. I'm a street man like you are, Tony. We're going to sick the IRS on billionaires that necessarily were Trump billionaires.
Well, yeah, that joint speech before Sessions.
That is sickening.
War on the wealthy. That, to me, that's the message I got from that speech.
War on the wealthy if you're not on the Democratic Party yet.
Liberals are the most open-minded people in the world until you disagree with them. Then they want to take away your free speech.
Or have some success and earn a lot of money. Then
Unless
they're going
to
come after you. By the way, do you know that the Biden administration, John, has asked for $80 billion in additional money for the IRS so that they can come after the wealthy and large corporations?
And Monica, I hate to say this. You're not Jewish. I'm not Jewish. Tony, you're not Jewish. I'm 6% Jewish, actually. The Gestapo. Are they creating? Is Washington creating a new Gestapo? Not necessarily all the patriotic FBI people, But like Hoover created 10 or 15 hitmen. Is that what the Department of Justice is doing? Preet Bharara, what did he say a couple days ago?
He said Rudy's in big trouble. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're trying to accuse Rudy of being a foreign agent, it doesn't get more low than that. It doesn't get more patriotic and America-loving than Rudy Giuliani.
He's not working for any government other than the U.S.
government. And for them to say, call
him
a foreign agent was such a disgusting low blow.
Well, I see the control booth is going nuts. We're supposed
to
take
a good
break.
Conversation.
And I understand. It was a great conversation. And that's what we should do more of.
Absolutely.
Amongst ourselves. I understand that Curtis Lewa is going to be calling in from the streets of New York to give us an update what's going on. Let's take a break, and then we'll hear what's going on in the streets of New York from Curtis.
John Katz and the team.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Show. I'm Lydia Serrani, joined by John Katzmatidis, Tony Carbonetti, and Monica Crowley. We had such a great conversation before.
Oh, we were heated up.
Feisty.
Yep. But we tell it like it is.
Yeah, we tell it like it is, and it was...
Or what we're saying is so radical.
It was
radical.
An honest conversation.
I don't even think it's like about right or left or conservative. I think it's just kind of, like you always say, common sense.
Tony, why don't you ask... Curtis, you came from the streets and you were chief of staff to Rudy. Ask Curtis how things are going.
Curtis, how are you?
Let me tell you something, guys. You're so important in my life that I have stopped the Mike Wallace of the hipster and millennial generation, Nico, in this New York Magazine interview. I told all of these hipsters and millennials, you have got to stop filming because I am talking at WABC, my place to be, for 30 years. So you see, Tony, I stopped the filming. Just to give you an update on today's activity, I was at the wake of the slain police officer in Suffolk County, and I had a detente with Andrew Yang. Everybody was watching as I was talking to Andrew. He was talking to me. I praised him for showing up at the police officer's wake. I didn't see any of the other candidates running for
That's
office.
That's hot news.
Pay respect.
Did you challenge him to a debate, Curtis?
Well, his staff saw me debating the cardboard cutout in Times Square yesterday. They couldn't stop themselves from laughing. But I said to Andrew, you know, I'm favored in the polls to win the Republican primary June 22nd. You're favored to win the Democratic primary. I'm looking forward to debating you. And he said, yep. Looking forward.
Well,
to
let's
that.
Have this a debate. Let's have a debate now, and forget about everybody else.
Yeah. Well, John, you allowed me to debate Fernando Mateo, and it was a rock'em sock'em debate.
That was a good
debate. I'd be more than happy to share a podium with Andrew
if
Yang.
If you
today.
And Andrew Yang decide to have a debate, we will broadcast it.
It's that would be something.
Real New Yorker versus the guy who's a poser. For
no, besides that, he's a Boston. He's the Boston Red Sox fan.
We've had two already
no.
so far.
No,
we've
no,
had Bloomberg
not,
and de Blasio.
That's almost as bad as being a Red Sox fan. It's Switzerland when it comes to the Red Sox and Mets. I hate them both.
So, Curtis, it's Monica. When you're out there campaigning, what's the number one issue you hear from voters? Is it bringing the economy back? Is it public safety or something else?
No, it's about crime. And also, hey, Curtis, when are you coming back to WABC? Because people have grown up with me there, three generations. But it's all about, Monica, law and order, refunding the police, hiring more police, quality of life, zero tolerance, because almost all the people I'm talking to, and those include my adversaries who don't share my ideology, they already have one foot out the door. They're thinking of moving to North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Texas, parts unknown. Unfortunately, they want to leave our great city, and unlike de Blasio, who treats them as if they're people of no consequence and says, hey, make sure the door doesn't hit you on the way back. I want to convince them to stay. And if they leave, they're still New Yorkers. I want them to come back, spend their money when the city completely opens up for business again.
Law and order, I think, is the number one issue. What do you think, Monica?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I just spent almost 2 years in Washington working for President Trump and Secretary Mnuchin at the Treasury Department. And I would come back to New York now and again. But now that I'm back, Curtis, I mean, the city is like unrecognizable. And the major issue for me and everybody that I talk to is public safety. It's law and order. It's that they do not feel safe walking down the street after the sun sets. They got to walk through clouds of marijuana smoke. They're looking over their shoulder.
Monica, I'm going to give you some scary statistics. Shootings up this week compared to the same week of last year, 214%. Victims shot 200%. Homicides are up 270%. We have this
how
is
Chicago.
Chicago, you know, Chicago 45 like a, people got shot just alone this weekend in Chicago.
Well,
listen, you know,
who wins the ball game?
To Governor Cuomo today, Governor Cuomo said, quote, people are not riding subways because it's unsafe. If I had a son, I wouldn't want my son riding the subway because he would be in danger. That comes from the man who runs the MTA, the money-taking agency.
But it's his fault. He's the one who signed off on the no-cash bail law.
Him and then de Blasio for not assigning enough police officers
police by de Blasio
to control the subway system.
Yeah, but I believe ultimately it's with Cuomo because we have more criminals out on the street. That guy that vandalized all of those synagogues, he was hit with 42 charges. He's already out on the street. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, you know, we've been patrolling Riverdale trying to protect the Jewish shuls and the Jewish synagogues, and he's back in the street, and we're going to continue the patrols to support the police and the community so he doesn't do it again.
What's going on underground, Curtis?
Oh, absolutely mayhem. A lot of emotionally disturbed persons, homeless people, they need care. We need to get them into a shelter where they get services and the emotionally disturbed. We need to bring them into mental health care hospitals, give them their medicine. We have to be a compassionate society. And the other thing, remember, no-kill shelters. One of my priorities is we're not going to be killing dogs and cats any longer in the shelter systems of New York. That was one of John Katsimatidis' main campaign promises in 2013, no-kill shelters. And I'll carry on in that tradition, John.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Challenge Andrew Yang. We're going to have the first run, whoever first run on the Republican versus first run on the Democratic.
Whoever wins the primaries.
No, yeah, but we're going to do it now.
That's right. Let's do it. Oh, yeah, you're right. Let's do it now. Will he do it?
I'll tell you what.
Do you have a fancy scarf like Andrew Yang, Curtis?
When I finish the interview with the great Nico, like I said, there's nobody bigger than Nico now. You know, his ego is so humongous he needs a crane to get him in and out of a room. I knew him when he was a little pisher.
Who's that?
Schmendrin, a person of no consequence.
Who's that?
I will call up Andrew Yang, and I will convey the challenge on behalf of WABC.
Who's Nico?
Oh, wait a second. Hey, this guy is big, huge. You should have him on the radio there, John.
I don't know.
This guy has 10 trillion followers. You talk about social networking. This guy wrote the book on it.
Who?
The pigeons?
But he'll bring him in.
John, I'm going to make a personal introduction to Nico. You need to know this man.
My
he is New
Nico.
York.
Okay.
Thank you, Curtis, for calling in. And we look forward to a debate. And we'll have some fun. And we have to worry about the future of New York, which is the biggest worry we all have. Right, Monica?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know what? New Yorkers will take a lot, but then when they hit the wall, they hit the wall.
Yes.
And this last time this happened to this great city gave the rise to Rudy Giuliani.
How did they say it in the movie, Monica? Huh? I'm mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. Let's take a break and we'll be back. This is John Katsimatidis, Cats at Night, and we're back. I mean, we've been having a lot of fun today.
What were we saying, John? We're mad as hell?
And we're not going to take it anymore. The biggest thing in New York City is the DA's race.
That's right.
And with us today is Kathy Wild, who represents, from the New York City Partnership, represents some of the largest companies in New York. And she wants to talk about DA's race. Kathy?
Thank you, John. Nice to be with you. And it is important to remember that the district attorney has a responsibility for the personal safety and security of the city. It's not just the law enforcement functions, that the police have, but it's also the district attorney. So this is an important race, and we should be paying attention to it.
And the district attorney is extremely important. I'm looking at this 8-page criminal complaint against that guy, 29-year-old Jordan Burnett. He's the one that was hit with 42 charges during an 11-day crime spree up in the Bronx. He was vandalizing all of these synagogues. And a second judge, because of the Bronx district attorney, saying he has to be ROR'd, he has to be released without any bail based on the new no cash bail law. And he's out walking on the streets, you know, and these are serious crimes. So the district attorney plays a huge role in keeping the right people behind bars.
And when I heard that, I was surprised that a hate crime wouldn't be in a category, in one of the categories that was considered necessary to keep somebody, you know.
So how many people are running for Manhattan DA?
I think 8.
And who do you think the top 2 or 3 are?
From what I understand from the polling that's been done, it is Tally Weinstein and Alvin Bragg are in the top of the race.
Is any one of those 3 for law and order?
Well, I just was on a call with where I listened to Tally speak, and they don't use the words law and order anymore. I think that's more relegated to television. But they talk about fairness, about safety, and about solving problems, that the DA just isn't there to inherit cases and prosecute them, but should be out there solving problems.
I would beg to differ. Hi, it's Tony. Nice
Tony,
to see you.
What goes through your mind when you hear that?
The DA is supposed to enforce the law. And the problem we have, and we've seen around the country, is the district attorney can choose not to prosecute. And thereby, they decriminalize certain things. And Kathy, everyone here up here is sick of me saying this. I walked into Duane Reade to buy toothpaste, and it's now locked up. And the guy says to me, if I don't lock it up, someone will steal it. Because they can walk in and take 2 or 3 items.
No, actually, Tally raised that same issue, and we were talking today about that bodegas, et cetera, are seeing people walk out with stuff and they can't do anything about it. She mentioned, too, there have been 300 shootings this year so far, and that suggests that we're not enforcing the gun laws that we have on the books. So certainly agree that there is a big enforcement issue here. And also just to speak up, the district attorneys obviously expressed concern after the fact about some of the provisions of the lack of judicial discretion on setting bail, that New York is apparently the only state that doesn't provide for that important option and discretion for our judiciary. And where were they when the legislature was debating this? It wasn't clear. So.
Well, Monica, the fact that hate crimes don't constitute, like, it's part, like, that doesn't make you automatically have to stay behind bars. And Asian hate crimes are up 400%. What goes through
you? It's unbelievable. Kathy, nice to talk to you. And, you know, we've been talking about how public safety is the number one issue for the mayoral race. What we're seeing, Kathy, is major metropolitan areas across the country have been infiltrated by this progressive movement. And you see district attorneys in every major city, from Chicago to Los Angeles to St. Louis, that have very far left DAs that are letting criminals just walk free. They're not prosecuting lower level crimes and so on. And that's already starting to happen here.
And it's not only that. Today it was announced that we're going to try and reopen the city and bring everybody back to offices as of May 19th. And without any acknowledgement that people are not going to come back to offices if they don't feel safe and secure,
right,
both on transit, in the streets, and right now they don't. And that's what we're hearing. That's the number one question that's raised by office employees.
Kathy, thank you so much for coming on, and this leads a much longer discussion. Thank you, Kathy Wall, New York City Partnership, Monica Crowley. We'd love you to come back again soon.
Anytime,
tomorrow.
Thanks.
And Tony Carbonetti, you're always welcome. Lydia Serrano, you're always here. John Katzimatidis, God bless New York, God bless America.